99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a celebration. The award-winning Midnight Ravers can now be heard every Friday from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. So wake the town and tell the people. We'll continue to present the best in music, history and social commentary, along with expert discussion of the important issues and events of today and yesteryear. So keep it locked into WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special. It's the Gary Knoll Show, and now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, here to share the latest on how to live a longer and healthier and happier life. We begin today with something a little different. The top 10 healthiest seeds that you can eat or consume in any way. And it's important, so please write these down. Now, yes, my programs are posted on the archives, so if you miss something, you can go back and listen again. But the number one seed is chia, C-H-I-A. Why is it the number one seed? Because it has 250% more protein than kidney beans. It has 300% more antioxidant strength than blueberries. It has 300% more iron than spinach, 600% more calcium than milk, 700% more vitamin C than oranges. Really? Yes. 700% more vitamin C than oranges. 800% more than the omega-3 fatty acids than salmon. 1,000% more fiber than rice, and 1,500 times more magnesium than broccoli. These are really powerful seeds. The average American never eats one in their whole life. So they're packed with vitamins and minerals, as tiny as they are, and you'd want to use like, two tablespoons. It also helps gel up something. So it's an excellent source of fiber, protein, antioxidants, and the richest plant source of the omega-3 fatty acids. It also helps to reduce joint pain and weight loss. It delivers energy and protects against serious ailments like heart disease and diabetes. And the seeds are gluten-free, which makes them appealing to people with celiac disease and who have an aversion to gluten. So it also increases blood levels of the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids by 30%. And that was done at Appalachian State University and the University of North Carolina. And it's also a good source of the alpha-linolenic acid, LA. That's a type of short-chain omega-3 fatty acid. And where fish is a source of the long-chain fatty acids, EPA and DHA. And growing research has linked consumption of the EPA and DHA in ways that are not as good as those of plant-based. So simply put that at the top of the list. And right behind it, hemp seeds, number two. And there's a lot of nutrition in hemp seeds. All 20 amino acids, including the 9 essential amino acids our bodies cannot produce, are in it. A high protein percentage of the simple proteins that strengthen our immunity and fend off toxins. So eating, let's say, 2 tablespoons of hemp seeds in any form could aid, if not heal, people suffering from immune deficiencies. This conclusion is supported by the fact that hemp seed has been used to treat nutritional deficiencies brought on by tuberculosis and other conditions. It's nature's highest botanical source of the essential fatty acids, with more essential fatty acids than flaxseed and any other nut or seed oil. It has a perfect ratio of 3-to-1 of the omega-6 linolenic acid and omega-3 linolenic acid for cardiovascular health and general strengthening of your immune system. It's a superior vegan source of protein and good for digestion, easier to digest. It's rich in phytonutrients, the disease-protective elements of plants, with benefits protecting your immunity, your bloodstream, your tissues, your cells, your skin, your organs, your mitochondria. It's known as a great source of the polyunsaturated essential fatty acids. And also, it's a seed that can grow into a plant that could give us natural fibers and also help with carbon reduction, because it acts as a carbon sink, grows much faster than any tree. So just one way to get the extra protein, the extra fatty acids in your diet. Now, mind you, some of these seeds will give the same oil, which means that you're really giving your arteries, your endothelium, a great benefit. Number 3, pomegranate seeds. Yes, pomegranate is rich in antioxidants. It helps protect your body's cells from the free radicals, which cause premature aging. In simple words, pomegranate juice pumps the level of oxygen in your blood. The antioxidants fight free radicals and prevents blood clots. This eventually helps the blood to flow freely in your body, in turn improving the oxygen levels in your blood. And pomegranates are especially high in polyphenols. That's a form of antioxidant to help reduce the risk of cancer and heart disease. In fact, pomegranate juice, which contains health-boosting tannins and anthocyanins and egallic acid, has higher antioxidant activity than green tea and red wine. The pomegranate, with its edible seed inside juicy little sacks, is high in vitamin C and potassium, low in calories, and that's important. And it's also a good source of fiber. And the antioxidant properties of a pomegranate prevent low-density lipoproteins, the bad cholesterol, from oxidizing. This essentially means that pomegranates prevent the hardening of the artery walls with excess fat, leaving your arteries fat-free and pumping antioxidants like they were 20 years old. In fact, mice that drank pomegranate juice were able to significantly reduce the progression of atherosclerosis by 30%. That's according to a Dr. Claudio Napoli, professor of medicine, clinical pathology, University of Naples, School of Medicine in Italy. So it's good. It helps reduce the damage on the cartilage of those who have maybe arthritis. And number 4 is flaxseed. And dietary fiber from flaxseed surpasses a lot of other seeds, but it also helps suppress rises in blood levels of lipids after a meal. So it moderates your blood level. That's good for pre-diabetic and diabetic. That's 100 million Americans, more or less, right there. In fact, the University of Copenhagen researchers report that flax fiber suppresses appetite and helps support weight loss. And flax has been cultivated for centuries, and it's been a celebrated, useful food all over the world. In fact, Hippocrates wrote about using flax for the relief of abdominal pains, and the French Emperor Charlemagne favored flaxseed so much that he passed laws requiring its consumption. So, another thing that we can add, it's also rich in lignans, L-I-G-N-A-N-S. These are phytoestrogens, the plant compounds that have estrogen-like effects on antioxidant properties. That helps prevent cancer. Phytoestrogens help to stabilize hormonal levels, reducing the symptoms of PMS and menopause, and potentially reducing the risk of developing breast and prostate cancer. And the fiber in flax promotes healthy bowel levels of functioning. That's good. So, great. Number 5, and I'm only going to do 5 today, are pumpkin seeds. Yeah, pumpkin seeds. Eat them as snacks. I do. They are the only seed that I'm aware of that is alkaline forming, and especially for people who have highly acidic diets, which is the average American. So add pumpkin seeds to your list of foods rich in protein, 100 grams, which is just about 3 ounces of seeds on a daily basis, provides 54% of the daily requirement of some people's protein. Yeah. So that handful of pumpkin seeds you eat 2 or 3 times a day, it's as better than a meat because it's not giving you too much protein, but it also is giving you L-tryptophan, and that can help boost better mood and give you a better night's sleep. And also, pumpkin seeds help prevent kidney stones, and that's important, and because it helps prevent the kidney stone formation like calcium oxalate kidney stones. And also, it helps fight parasites, especially tapeworms. And one more, sesame seeds. Sesame seeds may be the oldest condiment known. They are highly valued for their oil. And by the way, not just in the light yellow color, but also they come in black as well. And if you've never had this raw tahini, black tahini, try it. Tastes almost identical, but it's very rich in lignans. Not only are sesame seeds a very good source of manganese and copper, but they're also a good source of calcium, magnesium, iron, phosphorus, B1, zinc, and dietary fiber. In addition to these important nutrients, sesame seeds contain two unique substances, what is called sesamin, S-E-S-A-M-I-N, and sesamolin, S-E-S-A-M-O-L-I-N. Now, these are chemicals naturally found in the seed, what we call phytonutrients. Both of these substances belong to a group of special beneficial fibers called lignans, L-I-G-N-A-N-S, and have been shown to have a cholesterol-lowering effect in humans and to prevent high blood pressure, that's good, and increase vitamin E supplies. And sesamin has also been found to protect the liver from oxidative damage. Wow. Well, I think that that's more than enough for today. I've got more seeds and more information, but I just wanted to have information shared with you today that really makes a difference. So please start adding all of these into your diet. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment with a special commentary. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We do more original investigative reporting, more essays, and more commentaries than any other radio program in American history. Hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds, and they're all on GaryNall.com. And some are timeless. It's worth looking into these and reading them. I'm going to share one now with you. It took almost a year to do the research. Over 2,000 scientific peer-reviewed articles were reviewed. And now more than ever, every single day, there are new studies coming out and new comments from scientists and physicians about the mismanagement of the pandemic. And that's what this is about. And in this, it's important to understand that everything I'm saying is backed by peer review literature. And we have included at the end attachments with all of the studies. Now to this very special and very important and possibly life-saving commentary. In less than a month after the RNA experimental vaccines were rolled out, medical professionals and clinical physicians started to voice their deep concerns and issue dire warnings. After serious vaccine-associated injuries and deaths were reported in Norway and Germany, we should have put a pause and said, let's examine that, but we didn't. A number of skeptical doctors became fearful that mass vaccination campaigns would worsen the pandemic. They were right. Those who supported rushing to a vaccine or drug were wrong. Norwegian officials warned against vaccinating older patients with pre-existing illnesses. Why? Simple. Because you could overwhelm their immune system, which was already under stress or depleted. You also had opinions coming out of the Israeli National News stating that Pfizer used the nation of Israel as an experimental staging ground for rolling out its COVID-19 vaccine. Israel was the first country to launch a nationwide vaccine campaign. Consequently, Israel was responsible for the most aggressive COVID vaccination program, and medical experts were quick to observe that the risk of the vaccine injuries would be higher in people previously infected. And they also asked the question, if you're trying to seek herd immunity, and that's what everyone was talking about, everyone, we need herd immunity. And the figures varied from 60% to 80%. But once enough people became infected, were naturally infected, we would be protected. And that didn't happen. Yes, people were infected, and the younger people had almost no symptoms. They were asymptomatic. And yet we still demanded that everybody be vaccinated. Well, that's a contradiction. If you're seeking herd immunity and through natural infection, because you don't have anything else at that moment, no vaccine, and that's what you're, you know, hoping for, well, then when people are infected, shouldn't you have a program to help their immune response? Yes. And did you? No. Not a single thing were people told to do except stay indoors, which turns out to be just the opposite of what they should have done, and wait till a vaccine was developed so you could take it, or until you were too sick and you turned blue, then go to a hospital. In the U.S., following the first month of vaccinating Americans en masse with Moderna and Pfizer's experimental RNA vaccine, there were 29,000 adverse events requiring special medical assistance or hospitalization were reported. Now, mind you, that's what was reported through the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is notoriously wrong. In fact, a Harvard study showed that only 1% to 2% of adverse effects or deaths are actually reported. And many hospitals were not reporting adverse events. Nurses were not reporting them. They were told not to report it. And so we didn't have a true picture. So the picture we were given of 29,000 did not represent the truth. Many critics of vaccination by this vaccine pointed out that these COVID vaccine injuries had only been recorded in the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. However, for over 15 years, the VAERS system had been under considerable scrutiny as a horribly inadequate and failed system to accurately monitor actual serious adverse vaccination events. The actual number of injuries and deaths is likely 900% higher. But let's look at the COVID vaccines. We were told, get the vaccine, you will be protected, you will not pass it on, and you'll be able to return to a normal life. Not true. After Moderna and Pfizer's first clinical trial reports were prematurely announced to the media, one of the most repeated talking points was that the vaccines were 95% effective. Since the length of the RNA vaccine trials were interrupted long before their scheduled completion in order to rush them through the FDA and other nations' regulatory agencies for emergency use approval, the length of vaccine-derived immunity was never properly determined. No one knew how long will the vaccine protect you. The assumption was for a long period of time. It was not true. Nor was it possible to make any reliable scientific determination about the injection's long-term safety profile. The federal government's intended message was to persuade Americans that vaccination would protect one from SARS infection. However, it did not take long before government health departments started to report a rise in breakthrough cases or people who had been vaccinated, supposedly to be protected from the virus, who now came down with the virus. Well, how was it possible that in nursing homes not a single person had COVID until all of them were vaccinated, then they all got COVID and died? Shouldn't that have been a red flag? Yes, it should have. If we had responsible people as our Surgeon General, if we had any responsible person at the U.S. Public Health Service, but we didn't. And as a result, everywhere where people were getting COVID after the vaccine, and people who are elderly with comorbidities were getting COVID and dying from the vaccines, we were still saying, vaccinate the most vulnerable. And it was just the opposite of what we should have been doing. We should have been working on their immune systems, but we weren't. Not at all. Not in a single situation anywhere in the world. That's how absolutely remarkable was this entire fiasco. So now governments are reporting on breakthrough cases. Interesting they use the word breakthrough cases because you think it's something new. What's a breakthrough case? Well, it's a person who was vaccinated and then got COVID, exactly the opposite of what we were told. Again, everything becomes its opposite. And yet they were saying that's the only way to be protected. The vaccines were far less effective than people were led to believe. In Israel, tens of thousands of Israelis had tested positive within 2 weeks after receiving the first vaccine dose, and cases increased for those who received a second dose. 6 months into the vaccination period, there was still no certainty of how long immunity would last. Vaccinated persons were still required to wear masks and social distance. Ergo, what good are those vaccines? Well, then they prevent serious infections and death. That didn't prove to be true, just the opposite. The more vaccines you got, the sicker you would become and the more likely you were to die. Just the opposite. The British Medical Journal's associate editor, Peter Doshi, challenged the trustworthiness of the 95% efficacy figure, which was based solely upon confirmed PCR tests, which themselves were completely scientifically inaccurate. The decision to rely upon a PCR testing to diagnose positive COVID infections was dubious from the start. PCR was not developed either to confirm or diagnostically identify live active viral infection. What was not reported in Pfizer's original press releases were the suspected and unconfirmed COVID cases in both the vaccinated and placebo groups. After these cases are included in the calculation, the Pfizer vaccine's effectiveness nosedived to approximately 19%. But nowhere, especially the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, did you see them reporting on new information shows that the vaccine has gone to just 19%, far below the 50% threshold to authorize officially the FDA to have its use. That's according to Peter Doshi and published in the British Medical Journal. Evidently, Pfizer seemingly ignored the 3,410 unconfirmed COVID cases from its original press release. And another red flag in Pfizer's initial report was the exclusion of 371 trial participants from their efficacy analysis. Pfizer failed to explain the rationale for excluding these individuals. As the scientific evidence mounted against the RNA vaccine's efficacy, even Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla had to backtrack on his company's earlier claims. Since breakthrough cases, meaning you took the vaccine and now you're infected, cases with the Omicron variant among the fully vaccinated were escalating at an unprecedented rate. It became impossible to keep the lie alive without jeopardizing Pfizer's credibility. Speaking at a health care conference hosted by J.P. Morgan, Bourla admitted that, quote, two doses of the vaccine offers very limited protection, if any. Three doses with a booster offer reasonable protection against hospitalization and deaths, end quote. That also was not correct. Speaking on July 12th, Anthony Fauci had to admit that the COVID-19 vaccines, quote, don't protect overly well against infection, end quote. Totally contradicting everything he had said up to that point. Yet still he wanted everyone, man, woman, and child, to be vaccinated, even if they had natural immunity. This is one of the most remarkably unscientific medically irresponsible, public health damaging statements from a person who had done nothing accurate or acceptable up to this point. And yet he was still the one that all the media in the White House would turn to. A steady increase of studies indicate that vaccines do not provide any robust and long-term protection. Now that the speed of the virus mutation rate has increased, giving rise to completely new SARS strains, government health ministries and independent researchers are observing that despite higher vaccination compliance, death rates continue to rise dramatically. And guess in which group? The fully vaccinated, including those who've had four vaccines, including Anthony Fauci getting COVID after four vaccines and President Biden getting COVID after four vaccines and then getting COVID again. Recently in the Netherlands, Dutch researcher Dr. André Redert found no death reduction from mass vaccination. None. None. Which puts the entire effort of vaccinating to the lie. Depending upon the individual's health status and the strengths and weaknesses of his or her immune system, vaccine immunity can begin to wane rapidly after 3 months or earlier following vaccination. At best, immunity seems to last no longer, in the best of circumstances, than 5 to 6 months for the average person. Nor did boosters improve matters. However, nobody in the federal health agencies and drug industry cautioned at what point do repeated boosters create irreparable damage to the body's immune system. If we anticipate the emergence of new SARS-2 mutations in the future, when will constant booster shots for every new variant ever cease? 14 months into Israel's vaccination campaign and being forced to recommend a fourth shot, medical experts advising the Israeli health ministry raised an alarm. As reported in the New York Times, the scientists noted, quote, that too many shots might actually harm the body's ability to fight COVID and might cause a short sort of immune system fatigue, end quote. All right. Now that was reported in the New York Times. And from the Israeli scientists, there is no evidence that more boosters can prevent Omicron infections. I repeat, the Israeli scientists now say there is no scientific evidence that more boosters can prevent Omicron infections. But where was the first time you heard anywhere in the world that too many shots might actually harm the body's ability to have an immune response? It would cause fatigue on my program. Go back and listen to the archive shows. The protocols to prevent COVID and infection to keep your body strong. And then my warning that all you have to do is take a person whose immune system is already compromised. Remember, 130.5 million? And then keep giving them shots and you will destroy their immune system so their organs start to fail. That's exactly what we're saying now. So for those who said we shouldn't be doing this kind of programming, it's just the kind of programming that was absolutely necessary to do to save lives. But it's not ideological, and I'm not political. So for those who have no background in science, no background in public health, have never helped anyone overcome a disease, your opinion is your opinion. It does not change science. In her article published in Lancet's October 2020 issue, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky wrote, quote, listen carefully, there is no evidence or lasting protective immunity to SARS-2 following natural infection, end quote. She was 100% wrong. She should have been removed from her position. And yet she is still a power. In May of 2021, Dr. Marty Makary at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine harshly criticized the poorly regulated vaccine rollout. The health agencies dismissed the fact that over half of Americans already had developed some degree of natural immunity against coronavirus. In Makary's opinion, this constitutes, quote, one of the biggest failures of our current medical leadership, end quote. Quote, there is more data on natural immunity than there is on vaccinated immunity because natural immunity has been around longer, end quote. The containment of the spread of the new SARS variants worsens when our government officials and medical experts stand by their erroneous, completely false statements in order to push a false narrative about sufficient vaccine immunity. Dr. Paul Alexander, an epidemiologist and former COVID-19 pandemic advisor to the World Health Organization and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has collated over 150 separate studies. At that point, it's now over 200 studies showing that natural acquired immunity is more robust and far superior than the COVID-19 injections vaccines. So when you have between 150 and 200 high-quality studies, and now they're just pouring in, every day, every study is showing everything you've been told was wrong. Their house of cards is crumbling. And yet the media continues to carry forward with their lies. Therefore, this is no longer a debatable argument between two opposing sides comparing their supporting evidence. There is no credible study to even suggest that the vaccines provide stronger immunity than natural immunity. There is no credible study to even suggest that the vaccines provide more than what we were told. The evidence is not there. A Cleveland Clinic study followed over 52,000 individuals for 5 months and concluded that unvaccinated persons who have been infected with the SARS-2 virus, that's natural immunity, would likely not benefit from the vaccines. Okay, why would you vaccinate a person that has natural immunity? There are serious health consequences if you do. You could actually harm the person. Didn't matter. In December 2020, there was evidence that COVID infection was 99.9% effective in producing antibodies. Again, if you got COVID and weren't vaccinated, you had a 99.9% effective producing antibodies that might protect people from later infections. This was data Senator Rand Paul presented before Congress and at a hearing, and even Bloomberg, that would otherwise walk in lockstep with the CDC, reported a study indicating that natural immunity was 1,300%, 1,300% greater than vaccine-induced immunity. When the Delta variant was ravaging Israel, the Maccabi Health Care Services database, which enrolls 2.5 million Israelis, found that those who previously were infected with SARS-2 were much less likely than never infected vaccinated people to get Delta and develop symptoms or be associated with hospitalized or serious symptoms. The natural would be far less. A Washington University School of Medicine study suggests that natural immunity might last throughout one's life for a notable percent of the population, lifetime immunity. Persons with low levels of neutralizing antibodies might still be protected from SARS if they have robust T-cell immunity, which you could help build. On the other hand, the vaccines at best seem to provide no more at best than 6 months immunity. However, a very fascinating and interesting study that was never reported by the mainstream media came from Cardiff University and the University of London. The researchers discovered a new type of sentient killer immune cells that were self-renewing that might explain why natural immunity can last far beyond the time frame previously thought. Vaccination is unable to stimulate these new types of T cells. As tens of billions of dollars continue to be spent on research, one lesson the pandemic has taught is that the immunological and vaccine sciences know a lot less about the body's immune system than previously believed. Discoveries such as Cardiff London University research are challenging the entire vaccine paradigm. And now we are witnessing this directly as massive vaccination campaigns to vaccinate entire populations are proving to be far less promising to stop any pandemic. In retrospect, if all the dollars spent to develop experimental and poorly tested vaccines have been spent to effectively treat SARS infections from day one with known FDA-approved medicines, then millions of lives would have been saved and we would not be faced with a global scourge of vaccine injuries and deaths. Perhaps the biggest scandal during widespread PCR testing of populations was how it was being interpreted and portrayed to the public through the media. Putting aside the gross misuse of the PCR tests, a myth was created that anyone exposed to a person suspected of infection was a danger to others. Now, that's simply not the case based upon the actual studies. As we observe, this myth generated an irrational paranoia among those who blindly embraced the government's doctrine. There was no public reporting about the clear evidence of viral transmission that distinguishes symptomatic from asymptomatic infections. In a December 2020 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, symptomatic people infected someone else in the house 18% of the time. We can compare that with asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people who only infected someone else 0.7% of the time, not even 1%. This supports a Chinese study that followed 455 individuals who were exposed to asymptomatic infected carriers. None of the 455 persons tested positive after 5 days. There may be several reasons for this surprising anomaly. Perhaps the most likely explanation is that none of the assumed carriers were actually infected. This would conform with growing consensus that PCR testing is completely unacceptable for diagnosing active viral infections. And my source of information was the person that won the Nobel Prize in science for creating the PCR test, Dr. Kerry Mullis. There is an hour and 54-minute interview that I have with Mullis on this issue, and in it he repeatedly states that do not use the PCR test for making a diagnosis of a current disease. It's not meant for that. Also, it was being amplified up to about somewhere around 42 to 43 times, when anything above realistically 30 times would give you a false positive. So the end result is the vast majority of people tested with PCR tested false positive. And that should not have been then used as a way of saying, well, look how many people have the virus. It's a pandemic. When the actual number of people who had the virus was far, far less, not even reaching pandemic levels, therefore not justifying all the measures they put into place. Also, they're concealing the risk of COVID vaccines. Worries over the short and long-term risks of COVID-19 vaccines continue to mount. The educational nonprofit organization Physicians for Informed Consent focuses on statistical analysis of the available scientific literature of medical intervention. In a report released in early 2022, it noted that there is a lack of proven benefits of mass COVID vaccinations, nor was there any consensus that the vaccines lessened death before the FDA approved Pfizer's RNA gene therapy shots for children 6 months and older. The organization warned about the serious safety risks. Their warnings went unheeded. Even the New York Times charged the CDC with withholding reams of data pertaining to vaccine safety. There remains no rationale that we can find in any of the scientific literature for vaccinating children under 18. After the CDC analyzed test results from sites across the United States, the agency determined that the vaccine was only 60% effective 2 to 4 weeks after 12 to 16-year-olds received a second dose. By the second month, the vaccines were only 20% effective and hit rock bottom at zero effectiveness around the fifth month. As I have repeated earlier in this discussion, the RNA vaccines confer no benefit to those who were previously infected and have natural immunity. In the FDA's 66-page briefing document of Pfizer's data, according to the CDC, by February 2022, over 74% of children and adolescents had serologic evidence of previous infections. They had natural immunity, and therefore they had like zero opportunity for death unless they had some comorbidity or had leukemia, etc. In the wake of rising vaccine injuries and deaths, Government health ministries are making efforts to conceal the carnage. In Israel, leaked documents reveal that the Israeli government was concealing crucial safety data from the public in order to approve childhood booster shots. A commissioned study of adverse events from Pfizer's vaccine found that children ages 5 to 11 years of age had twice as many injuries as children in the 12 to 17 age group. Last year, the Public Health and Medical Professions for Transparency requested the FDA turn over all the Pfizer documents submitted to the agency for emergency use approval of its RNA vaccine. The FDA failed to comply, and the Public Health and Medical Professionals for Transparency subsequently sued. The FDA was forced by court order to publish all confidential documents. Now, among the tens of thousands of pages of Pfizer trial data and documents the FDA is being forced to hand over during the remainder of the year, attorneys discovered an approximate list of 1,291 vaccine adverse effects. We were never told this. We were told it was safe, that there would be maybe some redness and soreness in the arm and the deltoid where the vaccine was given. Not that there would be 1,291 adverse effects, and these included many life-threatening conditions based upon Pfizer's own research. All along, the company was aware that their RNA vaccine's potential catastrophic consequences were real, yet they hid this from the public. As of July 16, 2022, the European Union's Idrugia Vigilance database suspected adverse drug reactions recorded 46,600 deaths and 4.6 million injuries. And yet in the United States, it only took 50 deaths to stop all of the swine flu vaccines. And here we have, in just one area of the world, 46,600 deaths and almost 5 million people injured, and many of those injured, lifetime injuries. So gradually and reluctantly, the government is being forced by court order to turn over what was supposed to be completely transparent and was hidden, the actual downside of the vaccines, including the fact that now, through the information that has been released, we're finding a huge number of adverse effects like Bell's palsy, heart attacks, strokes, and otherwise completely healthy people. These include alterations in a recipient's hemoglobin coagulation profiles, electrolyte imbalances and renal functions, destruction of our kidneys and liver. In the United Kingdom, the British Health Security Agency has become so worried about on-the-ground facts that it has refused to publish further data on COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths based upon vaccination status. They're hiding information as an official policy. The agency earlier reported that persons who were triple vaccinated developed acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. The double vaccinated were suffering from antibody-dependent enhancement. Official data from the Canadian government shows that on average, triple vaccinated Canadians were losing as much as 75% of their immune system's capability compared to the natural immune system of the unvaccinated. Data reveals that a fully vaccinated account for 9 in every 10 COVID cases and 7 in every 10 hospitalizations and death across Canada, meaning the more vaccinated you are, the more likely you are to be hospitalized and die against those who are not vaccinated. Consequently, the vaccinated are unable to fight other viruses and bacteria, even cancer. Similarly to the Canadian statistics, the New Zealand government reported a 74% loss of immune strength among those triple vaccinated. In the CDC's Veris reporting system among the vaccinated, we find 68,000% increase in strokes, 44,000% increase in heart attacks, 5,000% increase in life-threatening injuries, and 6,800% increase in deaths. Actual figures reported nowhere in any of the media that supports the current agenda. And while men have been shown to be at higher risk of heart complications. Women are being ravished with irregular menstrual conditions. A more recent peer-reviewed study in the International Journal of Gynecology and Obstetrics shows alarmingly high rates of irregular bleeding and menstrual changes after receiving Pfizer's COVID-19 RNA vaccine. The study included fully vaccinated women ages 18 to 50 with no known gynecological comorbidities who regularly monitor their menstruation through electronic calendars. 23% experienced irregular bleeding following the vaccine. In Israel, Dr. Yaffa Shiraz at the University of Haifa discovered a 90% of vaccinated women reported that they had irregular menstrual cycles, and they were very worried because some believed this would be permanent. Last autumn in the United States, among adults ages 25 to 40, there was an 84% in excess death. First time in history. And this came from insurance actuaries of paying out actual death benefits. Now, this is above and beyond all other deaths. So then they measured what was the death rate in excess of what was expected for the previous 5 years, including the first year of COVID, before vaccines. And it didn't exist. But now, after vaccines, you have up to a 40% increase in overall death. And they're saying, we don't know what this is from. Well, you didn't have concern about heart inflammation or other conditions, and you called all these mild. That's the CDC. And finally, it must be noted that reports of miscarriages and fetal deaths among vaccinated pregnant women are rising exponentially. According to one group, there was 2,000% increase in fetal deaths. In one round of documents the FDA has had to turn over, data shows that the RNA from Pfizer's injection accumulates in the ovaries over time. After analyzing Pfizer's own data, it became clear that 82% to 97% of documented pregnancy outcomes resulted in fetal death. A 15-point variation was dependent on final outcome of those in the ongoing pending category. Earlier in 2021, official UK data revealed that cases of ovarian cancer were at an all-time high. United Kingdom's medical regulator received over 40,000 reports relating to reproductive and menstrual disorders suspected as adverse reactions to the COVID injections in 2021 alone. So in conclusion, a common pattern the nation has witnessed throughout the COVID-19 pandemic during the past 2 years has the government's recourse to emergency powers, executive orders, and threats against those who criticize or refuse to be obedient. This is not only notable in the United States, but among all Western nations most aligned to the United States. Such measures for tackling national crisis in the absence of civil discourse and professional scientific debate is characteristic of authoritarian governments. Strong-arming dictates and draconian rules to destroy a population's free speech and other freedoms has always been a devious ploy to conceal the wrongful intentions of leaders and their minions who execute their harsh policies. And it's just one final note, and this was just revealed. The CDC colluded with big tech platforms to censor anyone questioning vaccines. A law firm, group of lawyers, filed a Freedom of Information Act request to investigate unconstitutional acts between the federal government and the big tech social media platforms. The lawyers received 256 pages of communication between the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and Google, Facebook, and Twitter. These pages document egregious violations of the U.S. Constitution and provide evidence that the federal government violated the Nuremberg Code. According to the latest document release, officials with the CDC and the Biden administration colluded with content moderation terms at Google, Twitter, and Facebook to block any U.S. citizen, no matter what their background, any scientist, any physician, from being able to share with the average American on these platforms information about the truth of COVID vaccine safety and efficacy. This is a blatant violation of the First Amendment, as it describes government being directly involved in mass censorship of the American people. And that's unfortunate, but that is the latest information. We're coming up to the end of this segment of our program. We're going to say goodbye to our WBA audience so they can go to their news that they have at the top of every day and continue to support WBAI by being a good buddy, contributing every month to them. Thank you, and we look forward to sharing more. We'll continue on PRN.live to the top of the hour.
Let me hear the worshipers! Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
cents a day. Not much, is it?
Who's cheap?
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Democrats say they have finally reached a deal on their massive economic package after holdout Senator Kyrsten Sinema agreed Thursday to move forward with the Inflation Reduction Act, but only after Democratic leaders agreed to abandon a position that would close the carried interest loophole, a tax break exploited by hedge fund and private equity managers to pay lower tax rates than middle-income workers. Among other things, the proposed legislation provides for cheaper prescription drugs, free vaccines for seniors, and generous tax credits for electric vehicles. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said a revised version of the bill would be released Saturday, which is when the Senate will open debate on the measure, with a possible vote by Monday morning. Alex Jones is back in court today, where he is being sued for falsely saying the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting was a hoax. Yesterday, a jury ordered the right-wing conspiracy theorist to pay more than $4 million in compensatory damages to the parents of a 6-year-old boy who was killed in the massacre. The jury must now decide how much Jones must pay in punitive damages, which are awarded when the court finds the defendant's behavior to be especially offensive. Lawyers for the parents are expected to present evidence on Jones's net worth and say that Jones is hiding millions of dollars in assets. The Department of Justice yesterday announced federal criminal charges against 4 former and current Louisville police officers over their roles in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor. Former Louisville Metro Police Detective Joshua Janes was taken into FBI custody Thursday morning and charged with obstruction and civil rights violations for knowingly using false, misleading, and incomplete information to get the no-knock search warrant for Breonna Taylor's home that led to her death. Also charged Thursday were Louisville Police Sergeant Kyle Meany, Officer Kelly Hannah Goodlett, and former Louisville Police Detective Brett Hankinson. The Biden administration on Thursday declared monkeypox a public health emergency, signaling new urgency with cases on the rise across the U.S. As of yesterday, over 7,000 monkeypox cases have been reported in the U.S., according to the CDC. The declaration empowers federal agencies to fund the development of vaccines and treatments now in short supply and hire extra workers to manage the outbreak. The Biden administration has been heavily criticized by some public health experts for not moving faster to address the crisis. In making yesterday's announcement, Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra told reporters, quote, "We're prepared to take our response to the next level in addressing this virus," close quote. And the Kremlin says that it's open to talking about a possible prisoner exchange involving basketball star Brittany Griner. Yesterday, Griner was sentenced to 9 years in prison for carrying less than a gram of cannabis oil through a Moscow airport. Today, speaking from a summit in Cambodia, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said, quote, "We are ready to discuss this topic," close quote, adding that any prisoner swap talks should happen only within a private diplomatic channel. Speaking from the same summit, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that the U.S. will pursue talks with Russia, noting that a substantial proposal has already been put forward. It's been reported that the potential prisoner exchange would return convicted Russian arms trafficker Viktor Bout in exchange for Griner and former Marine Paul Whelan, who is serving a 16-year prison sentence for espionage. Given that a conviction is usually needed before arranging a prisoner exchange, it is now expected that talks about a swap could quickly accelerate. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Stay tuned for Leonard Lopez.